Blog Talk Radio.
Received a diagnosis that appears to be a lifelong sentence? Maybe you've been told that you must remain on prescription medications just to function somewhat normally each day. Today's guest may just rock your world with a totally out-of-the-box perspective on your mind and mental well-being. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, spiritual relationship healer, and somatic body psychotherapist, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the book, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and the romantic novel, Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of Healing Through Love seminars, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me Relationship System, and the upcoming 30-Day Love Challenge. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who keep on proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Dr. Jeffrey Fidel, a licensed medical doctor, was diagnosed with bipolar 1 disorder. Instead of giving in to the prognosis that he would have to stay on prescription medications for the rest of his life, he found a way to turn off the voices in his head and listen to the one voice that counts, the one in his heart. And he's going to tell us a lot about how the heart speaks. Our hearts have 5,000 times the magnetism of our brain. Dr. Fidel discovered the teaching of Lao Tzu, Tao Te Ching, to connect with the voice originating from his heart beyond thought and the realization that we and the universe are one. And he explains how he knows this. With my own decades of meditation and study of this phenomenon of spiritual awareness, I'm personally excited to have the opportunity to be speaking today with Dr. Jeffrey Fidel. So I want to welcome you, Dr. Fidel.
Thank you, Dr. Goodstone.
So why don't we begin by you telling us about your background and what led you to defy the medical system and not return to the doctor to heal yourself by, and you'll tell the process of hearing the voices and letting yourself get into some scary psychological states in order to go through it and heal. So tell us about that.
Well, I had a pretty typical American life up until about a year and a half ago. I grew up in New York, and then I went off to college and then to medical school, and then I became a diagnostic radiologist and practiced for 15 years or so in private practice. And then about a year and a half ago, and this is what set off the whole thing, so this wasn't necessarily as much by choice, but something happened in my life, a trauma that sparked off something that brought about this change within me. So, and the trauma was the loss of my marriage, and then my dog died. And then I decided I didn't want to practice medicine. So this huge change on the outside world of me kind of collapsed. And then not knowing how serious it was at the time, I I threw my meds away. I was medicated for first depression at the age of 20, and then I went on to receive another diagnosis at 28 for bipolar type 1. And so at this time, a year and a half ago, I also threw my meds away because I felt that I had nothing left to lose and I was going to take the greatest risk of my life and just go on this journey, so to say, that I didn't really know what was going to happen through the journey. And this was the experiment of my life, so to say. And what I learned inside of myself is what I want to share with other people now, because I now see all human beings as the same. And this is something I learned all inside of myself.
So the question I have is, why did you not accept the medical system and taking drugs for the rest of your life? What was the problem? How did you feel while taking the medication?
Okay. So the reason I threw those medications out at the time was that I knew there was just something that wasn't right about taking medicines. I felt that, first of all, I felt like I walked around kind of like numb, meaning my mind was numb. Those
mm-hmm.
meds numbed my mind. And there was just something deep inside of me that just, it felt like I was living a lie the whole time. So even though I was able to function in society on these medications, there was just something not right about it. And I think most people could feel this way because there's something else inside of ourselves. Given the choice, I don't think a person would choose to be medicated. If they had a choice, would you rather take these medications or not take these medications? I think most people would prefer not to be medicated because the medications, they know, take away something from them. And what it does is it numbs their mind. And that's not really, you know, the preferred way of living is not having a numbed mind. And I think that most people will agree with that.
All right. But the other side of it, and that's why so many people take medications, is they're not comfortable with their mind when it's not numbed.
They have
intrusive thoughts and, you know, and can be very depressed. They can become suicidal. So tell us about what you went through when you threw away those medications.
So exactly what you said is what happened to me. In other words, at that time I was thought identified, meaning that if I had a thought in my mind, like if I had a thought I wanted to commit suicide, I identified with that thought and then I wanted to commit suicide. Or if I had a thought that I was unhappy, that thought would carry me through and then I was under the belief system that I was unhappy. Now, these thoughts can
mm-hmm.
even become more powerful when they become visual, because then they can really take a person away. And this is the power of thought and of thinking in the mind, is that it can consume the reality. Because thought is like an internal sense. We have our senses outside, you know, vision, tasting, touching, smell, that people can share with each other. But then on the inside of us is more of this internal sense called thought, and thoughts can become so powerful that they can literally engulf someone, and that's what happened to me. Now, I didn't know it at the time because I was immersed in thought, but this is when I became immersed in a state that would be even diagnosed as schizophrenia today, because I was in such a thought created world that I didn't even know that the external world existed anymore. And in fact, this is what's going on with people that are suffering with schizophrenia. It's not that they're not schizophrenic. They're just in a state of mind that is overpowering to the point that the physician can't reach them, quote unquote, because the patient is so engulfed in thought you know, it's hard to interview someone that's having a daydream, so to say. And that's what's going on.
And it's not
I don't
always
know.
Schizophrenia. It's also multiple personalities. There was a wonderful movie, Sybil, that showed a therapist working with this person, Sybil, who had many personalities that she shifted into. And through lots of counseling, not through the drugs, she actually brought those personalities together and helped that person to get integrated. But now we use medication for all kinds of ailments.
This is correct. And when she's entering the multiple personalities, quote unquote, she's identifying with multiple thoughts in her mind. So all human beings behind their thinking mind, we're all the same. So the way I like to best describe it is that we are not who we think we are, but we are rather the beings that think. It's actually flip-flopped. Because and suffering occurs because when we identify with our thoughts, then we can get swept away into our thoughts. So what all human beings share together is the beingness, and that's behind the thinking or the actual thoughts. In other words, what's producing those thoughts, and that's who we are as human beings. We're the beings, not the thoughts.
Well, I'd love you to explore that more. So tell us now how the teachings of the Tao Te Ching brought about this difference in your worldview or your perspective of yourself and who you are.
Yes, well, without the book, the Tao Te Ching, and all the teachings by Lao Tzu, I would not have been able to discover this. With the books, for me, I didn't read the books. I practiced the books. In other words, there's a difference between knowing something with the mind, and that's to intellectualize and to understand with thought. And then there's another way to practice. It's the same thing if we play a sport. I could learn all about how to hit a golf ball, but if I go up and know every single thing about the physics of hitting a golf ball, if I go up to hit a golf ball, knowing it in my mind won't really help me. So it's the same thing with the Tao. It wasn't just reading the book and understanding it with my mind. It was actually doing all the practices. And these are very ancient practices. And they basically teach human beings how to become, not judge other people, how to forgive within ourselves, how to love ourselves. And these practices it can be done. They take a lot of discipline, but over time it can heal a person from the inside. And that's pretty much what these books enable someone to do when they're practiced properly.
So can you give an example of how you would practice some of the thoughts or concepts?
Yes. So for example, there might be, for example, I'll give you, my heart was broken back when I was in college, when I broke up with my first girlfriend. And so I remember specifically the time I said to myself, I'll not be heartbroken again by another woman. I kind of made a promise to myself. I was 18. I remember exactly where I was when this happened. Now, at that point, I kind of blocked myself off, not knowing it really, but my ability to feel again went away. And so although I was able to date many women after that point, I never was able to feel again, so to say, because I was subconsciously afraid of feeling a sensation in my heart again, you know, heartache or heartbreak, whatever a word can be. So what I was practicing a lot of was bringing my mind's awareness back to the heart area and allowing myself to just it's a meditation in a way, to just allow myself to experience parts of my body, and when I say experience, bring my mind's awareness to them that I was subconsciously protecting. So in that way, these were my practices, is learning myself not just in my mind, but to go bring my mind's awareness to places within my body that I was afraid to go to. And most of those areas are around the heart area.
It's fascinating.
It's a very subconscious protection mechanism that I developed over the years that got stronger and stronger. So it's breaking down those protection mechanisms and allowing to feel once again.
Let me ask you something. When you block that feeling, is that what led to the bipolar disorder? Blocking those feelings over time?
Bipolar disorder is just a convenient scientific label for something. No one can know the mind of another human being. So when people say bipolar disorder or any other disorder, quote unquote, it's a description of a state of mind is the best way to really look at it. By an outside observer that can never know the mind of another person. So what happens in bipolar, and I can actually tell you now what bipolar is, now looking back on it, is a bipolar is a state of mind where a person thinks to themselves depressing thoughts, like they could even be suicidal. I don't want to go on anymore. I feel depressed. These thoughts run in the mind of a person. And so what happens is the person's identified with those thoughts and then they become depressed, quote unquote, and then their behaviors change based upon the thoughts in their mind. So they might hear those thoughts. They don't like the thoughts. They might start drinking, take drugs. They might go to bed all day, not be able to get out of bed. And then because they're consumed with these thoughts. And then the ability to shut off the thinking mind is what happens in bipolar. Then the mind becomes completely blank with not a thought in the mind. Of course, this is a great feeling for the person because now they're not hearing the thoughts in their mind. I'm depressed. I don't want to go on anymore. So they become happy. And then without all the interfering words in their mind, their senses actually become very heightened, like smell, touch, taste, all these things are heightened because there's no interference in the mind with words. And then they become in this state that's labeled mania by an outside observer. But the problem is that when the mind is turned on again, then the depressing thoughts again, and now the patient's locked into two states of mind, the depression, thoughts, and the absence of thought with heightened senses, known as mania, by an outside observer. And unfortunately, those are the only two states now that the person, it's a locked-in state of mind.
Wow. I have never heard it described like that. Wow. So
yeah,
concept. I'm sorry, go on.
No, it's hard for psychiatrists to know it because unless they're observing other people from the outside. So we can't know. This is only what I told you is from my personal experience of being in the state of mind of bipolar. So, and this is the advantage of having gone through the state of mind that now I can describe it to other people rather than have a doctor try and look at another person's behavior and try and figure out what's going on in a person's mind because it can't really be done. This is kind of the advantage of having gone through the state of mind myself.
Wow, yes. It's powerful. So now you have another concept, an important concept about I, which is the name of your book. It's either I or one. And you say that I is our self and that there's an egoic self and a non-dual self. So please tell us about this. Tell us how you came up with the idea for your book and what it all means.
Well, the book initially was going to be blank, but I didn't know how to, there'd be no way to search for it because, it wasn't supposed to be I, but unfortunately we have language. So it's just a vertical line. So like you said, it's either I or one. It's up to the mind of the interpreter. So what an egoic self is a thought identification of self, and that's how I knew myself up to a year and a half ago before I did the inward journey. In other words, I knew myself as Jeffrey Fidel that grew up in New York. If anyone asked me who I was, I'd just go through this list. Well, who are you? Well, I'm Jeff Fidel. I grew up in New York. I was brought up Jewish. This whole list of things that I acquired in my mind. So the egoic self is the acquired thoughts, because when we're all babies, we don't have any thoughts in our mind. These are acquired from society, from either our parents or what we're brought up. So what all humans have in common is pretty much that the blank slate mind. And when our minds are blank slates, when we're born, we're in that pure state of beingness. In other words, this is why all humans are the same, is before we have acquired thought, we start off in this state. I don't know any people that, any babies that can hate another person. It doesn't happen. Until the baby starts to acquire thoughts and ideas, then they can think in certain ways. But this is, all human beings are the same. This goes without saying. It's just thinking that could make us think otherwise. So the egoic self is the thought identification self, which is that list I told you, my name and what have you, my profession, where I grew up, my religion. And the non-dual self is basically that, is the pure, it's just the self or the non-self, so to say, that knows itself as one with all existence, that, you know, human beings, whether they know it or not, are woven into existence. There's no taking us out of existence. And in fact, this is something that I'm going to put forth to the physics community to go back through their observatory and reexamine their cosmic radiation background, because guess who's in that background measurement? We human beings are. So when the universe takes a measurement, or when scientists are taking a measurement of the universe, it's actually the universe measuring itself, because humanity is woven into it. If an observer looks back on planet Earth from the moon, mm-hmm. we're in the universe. It's just that we're looking out at the universe trying to figure it out, but we are that itself. So that's why science is kind of coming up with a dead end here.
Well, there's evidence, there's been research done by the Institute of Noetic Sciences about the consciousness of the experimenter affecting the outcome of the experiment. That you can't separate the experimenter from the experiment.
Well, that's the truth. This is what the Tao teaches, that that there's no self and other, that's just a concept of the mind, that what's being observed and the observer are actually the same thing. The mind forms the duality of a difference, and this is the deception of the egoic self, so to say. Like, someone might think themselves different than their surroundings, and that's the duality that's formed by the mind. But when the mind is quieted down into a state of no thought, then the being, meaning us, becomes one with what is. And this is not taught in the West. To go into the state of no mind is not taught, because the West is trying to figure it out with the intellect. However, the intellect, in other words, that which is figuring, is part of the existence itself. So our minds or our brains or whatever you want to call it, and science proves it, it's made of carbon and hydrogen and oxygen. All this stuff is forged within stars. So what we're using to mm-hmm. think with is actually the existence itself. So when existence tries to figure itself out, it's no longer existence. It's an idea of existence, which is not existence. Existence itself is unnameable, and that's the non-dual self that knows itself to be existence, which we all are.
I'm just thinking as you're talking about power yoga. I mean, I studied yoga so many years ago, and we part of it was meditation and really knowing yourself and breathing and relaxing and feeling the body parts and being aware of it. So power yoga is like using your mind to push your body and forgetting about, you know, the essence of it.
Yes, the essence of the body, like you say, we can learn ourselves, and this is what the mind does, is it has a tendency that every part of the body, it'll name it. So even if the yoga instructor says, now I want you to bring your attention to your breath, and so the mind is thinking, okay, I'm breathing now. But the mind is always mm-hmm. putting words in. So to get the mind to stop analyzing and putting words onto everything it sees is quite the discipline, because that's what took me months and months and months, was to go into these states of no mind for weeks at a time. And then I was able to learn myself beyond my thinking mind. But as far as I'm concerned, that's the only way to liberate myself from my own thoughts. Because in the end, any person that's suffering, whether they know it or not, it's their own mind that's causing the suffering and mental illness. They're identifying with their thoughts, and then they become swept away by their thoughts.
Well, as you're talking, you did it yourself. You went into that state and went through what you needed to go through. But there are people that can help with this. I mean, I've spent time in a yoga intensive with Guru Mai, where it's a 3 or 4 day weekend or a week long event, where they start with chanting and drumming and talking, and they do a lot of stuff, stories and teachings to clear your mind. And then finally, they let people meditate when they've already been through a lot of the thought process. So you did it on your own. So tell us how you did that, what you did, what you went through to get clear about all of this.
Well, this is why what I did is extremely dangerous. And so even though I say this, what I did was beyond dangerous, because I didn't know it at the time. I didn't think that I could get to the point that I wanted to kill myself. Now, when I say I, that means my mind. And so I got into these states of mind where I didn't know what to do anymore. These states of mind are this is why consider it was a new world adventure, so to say. I only know now that I was able to make it out on the other side. Like when they sailed sea, they thought that the world was flat. They didn't know that they were going to be able to come back around again. So this was the luck of it all. But so I did get to the point where I couldn't, when I say I, my thoughts wouldn't allow me to live anymore. I had to hide knives in my mm-hmm. house. My son was in the other room. I didn't know what to do. This happened like a year ago. And mm-hmm. So what the Tao enabled me to do, and I put this in my book, there were certain verses of the Tao that enabled me to trust another voice that was inside of myself. Now, granted, I'm a doctor, so, and I never believed in anything because I'm an intellect.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to trust in this other voice within myself that was coming from my heart. And that's how this other voice, which every human being has within them, that comes from our heart, that was the voice I was able to then pretty much appoint as my teacher for the next year to come. And this is the faith within myself to have, you know, that's I guess where the strength was, to put all my faith in something that I couldn't see. And so this voice within, so to say, I was so confused for months. I didn't even know who I was anymore. I didn't know I was going to get my thought processes back again. So this mm-hmm. journey in was extremely intense and deep. And so you know, I still listen to this voice. This is my voice of conscious. This is what every human being has inside of themselves, and this is the voice that unites humans as one.
And what I have to add here is that the yogis that taught, I'm talking about advanced yogis for centuries, they always required a teacher for someone not to try to go into meditation and do it all alone, because it is difficult. So do you have a way that you can help
people? Yes, because the mind can come in, and if this is what happened with me. No one taught me any of this. And so my mind, my thinking mind, didn't know what to do when there, it was confronted with another voice within itself. So I was very scared, of course. But now I know what the other voice within, and this is something I'll teach psychiatrists when the day they want to hear that, that it is normal to have another voice. Hearing voices, the people that they're labeling as crazy for hearing voices, they're not crazy. In fact, it's normal to have another voice, and I'll tell them what this other voice is. And that's kind of, you know, in a way I want to serve as a liaison between the patients and the physicians. Being a physician myself, I'm going to tell the doctors, remember when you were a kid and you had an imaginary friend? There was another person you were talking to when you were talking to yourself, and this is the other voice. You might have forgotten about it, but all humans have this within us, and this is our original voice. This is who we truly are. And this is how we know when we say that someone's done something wrong, it's because our conscious or our voice within knows that it's not right, and this voice is from our heart.
Wow. Well, you have a powerful mission, and you know our medical profession can certainly use some assistance. It's wonderful. So I have one more question for you.
You know, science or medicine, I'm still an intellect. I'm still a scientist, and science has its validity. I won't discount science because wonderful things have happened in the world with science. There's no denying that. But at the same time, thought is a tool like anything else, and if it's not used properly, it can become a very dangerous endeavor. And if we break down human beings into science projects and try and make them into serotonin and dopamine sets, we have to be careful about this because, you know, human beings, we're not that, you know. We're loving, you know, every human, I don't care where they are, like in their heart, that's who they are. They're a loving, innocent being. And a lot of the things that we see in the world today is just a projection of their own internal anger out at the world. If we look into the childhoods of some of what we might deem bad people, dictators or what have you, it could always be seen that they're normally beaten as children or something really bad has happened to them. And then, unfortunately, that anger inside is then projected out, and you know, that's when atrocities in the world happen.
Absolutely. So my final question, which you touched on just now, is what is love? You said we're loving beings. So what is love?
So love, love is just complete presence with another human being. In other words, there's no words or anything. It's the pure sensory presence with another human being. I think it's always touched upon. If we look at another human in their eyes, we connect on a level that's when words die out, and just two people are just so immersed with no more thoughts, just you know, just locked into their eyes and the touch and what have you, without any words, and completely in the present moment with the person. Then that's the greatest love we can give. It's just that attention, the full attention without the mind coming in and analyzing and even posing the question, what is love? Because love is beyond all words.
So tell us how our readers can find your book and maybe how they can get in touch with you.
So the best way is on my internet site, which is currently my name. So it would be www.jeffreyfidelmd.com, which is JeffreyFidelMD.com. And on that website is a link to the book. The book is on Amazon, and it's probably easiest to just use my name to search for it, which again is Jeffrey Fidel, MD. Or it has a subtitle. It's listed as One MD's Inward Journey to Liberate Himself from Mental Suffering. That's so the spelling again is JeffreyFidelMD. To get to the website is probably the easiest way.
Yes, and it's wonderful that your goal is to reach out to doctors and teach them about this. I look forward to hearing more about it.
Yes, I'm looking forward to the opportunity the opportunity, because I'd love to have the opportunity. So any doctors or hospitals that are listening to this, I would love to share this information. Because it's really my goal to help people through what I personally know to be what the mind can do and the amount of suffering it could impose upon a person.
Well, Dr. Fidel, it's been just delightful speaking with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Goodstone.
So I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, HealthyBabyBoomersNetwork.com, to get your free report, How to Live to 100 and Beyond, and Be Happy and Healthy. If you're ready to create lasting love, click the link to join the 30-Day Love Challenge, which will start in a month or so, at DrErikaGoodstone.com. I look forward to speaking to you again soon.